Good evening, everybody. Sorry I'm a few minutes late. Emergency evacuation, you all know. Don't think there are any strangers here. I think we all know that the fire escapes are at the back and the front of the room, where the toilets are and where the drinking water is. Thank you. Do we have any apologies for absence?
Yes, Chairman, apologies from Councillor Fallon-Arnold.
Right, thank you. Minutes of the last meeting, which start on page 3 of your agenda. Would someone like to move those for me?
I will.
Thank you. Would someone like to second them? Thank you. Does anybody have any comments on those minutes or anything to do with the accuracy of the minutes? Thank you. If we could vote on those minutes then, please.
Chairman, they've been agreed unanimously.
Thank you.
One abstention.
And then we have the minutes of the Resources Working Party, which was held on the 8th of September 2016. Would someone move those for me, please?
I will.
Thank you. John, you'll second them. Thank you. Does anybody have any comments on the accuracy of those minutes? Thank you. Could we vote on those then, please? Accuracy of the minutes. Yeah.
Point of order, Chairman.
Have I done something wrong there?
Yes, as a point of order, Chairman, I don't see how this committee can vote on the accuracy of the minutes of the working party.
Sorry, have I done that wrong? Yeah. Sorry, we are. Thank you, Luke. So we're voting to accept the recommendations from the Resources Working Party. Good job, I have you lot to keep me straight. So do you want to take that vote again? Can you do that, Nikki?
Chair, how many recommendations? There we go.
What recommendations have we got then? Are we taking them separately? How many are there?
Well, minute 53 is that the report be noted. Minute 54 is that the comments of members be taken into consideration when formulating the final response to the consultation. Minute 55 is that the report be noted, which was financial management information. Minute 56 is capital monitoring, and that's that the report be noted. 57 was the capital programme progress report, and the decision there was that the report be noted. So we are looking at the...
What are we voting on, Chair? I mean, it's tremendous news, but I can't see why we're voting on it. Where does it take us? Because we haven't got here what... the members' comments were, just to pick one up, etc. So, I don't see we have to do anything other than we could note the whole lot if you like. But
happy to change my wording.
I can't see the point in doing anything when we've had a discussion. We all know what it means that those were there. Mm. Here can't make any comment on it because we haven't got anything to comment on, really.
Thank you for that. So, would you like to take the vote on that again, Nikki?
Yeah,
okay. We can vote on that then. Thank you.
Chairman, that's 6 votes for and 3 abstentions.
Thank you. Item 5 is urgent business, and I have no urgent business. So item six is then declarations of interest. Does anybody have any interest to declare? No?
No.
Thank you. So item seven is then the 2015-16 statement of accounts, which is on page 11 of your agenda. Peter, assuming that this is yours.
Yes, Chair, thank you. The Council is required to approve and publish its accounts by 30th of September, next Friday, I think. The statement of accounts themselves, actual documents, starts at page 13 of the agenda. The accounts were presented to overview and scrutiny last night and were accompanied by the external audit opinion, which is attached again to this report at Appendix C on page 113 of the agenda. The accounts were subject to a rigorous audit, and the presentation of the findings from the audit was given to the Overview and Scrutiny Committee by KPMG, who are our external auditors. I'm pleased to announce that the accounts have received a clean bill of health, and the auditor's report contains one audit adjustment and an associated recommendation which we've responded to within their report. The one audit adjustment related to how we were accounting for Section 106 monies in the balance sheet. We were showing them as a short-term liability. The auditors identified that the balance sheet should be split between long-term and short-term liabilities based on the repayment date within each Section 106 agreement. We accepted that that was the case, and we made the necessary adjustments. This really feels like it's just a presentational issue. It simply involves moving a figure from one part of the balance sheet to another. It doesn't affect the bottom line outcome in 15-16 or the net worth of the authority. In terms of the council themselves, I don't think there are any real significant issues that I need to bring to the attention of members in terms of the council's financial position at the end of the year. The council ended the year with a budget surplus of £650,000. Resources Working Party received a final outturn report on the 8th of September, which highlighted the main budget variances during the year which contributed to this surplus. Salary underspend was the most significant of these as a result of the council preparing for its 16-17 budget savings target. So I've transferred the surplus of the new homes to the new homes bonus reserve, and this decision was linked to the approval of a drawdown of £958,000 from the new homes bonus reserve in the current financial year to fund the cost of organisational change. Note 8 to the accounts on page 48 of the agenda highlights the movement in earmarked reserves, quite an important table really, and this includes the transfer, as well as the transfer to the new homes bonus reserve, the transfer of £200,000 from the restructure reserve to fund the cost of the voluntary redundancy process in the year. The table hopefully gives members a clear picture of all the movements that have taken place on all the cash-backed revenue balances of the council. I confirm that the final accounts presented to members today for approval represent a true and fair view of the financial position of the council at the 31st of March 16, and members are requested to approve the statement of accounts and give me authorisation to sign the letter of representation. Chair, I'm happy to take any questions. There is quite a lot of detail in the statement of accounts. If I can't answer the questions tonight, then I'll come back to members after the meeting with a written response.
Thank you, Chairman. The auditor has asked you to take a particular course of action of literally moving numbers about on the spreadsheet, as it were. Is this for their ease of looking at and doing their job, or is it an actual legal requirement in financial accountability?
No matter how good your accounts are, the auditors are always going to find something, and I'm happy that this is the extent of the findings, to be honest. They found something. It's something we've done for a number of years, and we've had the accounts audited, and it's not been picked up in the past, but I accepted their findings, and it did make sense, so I accepted that we would do the adjustment.
I'd just like to clarify my understanding of the transfers with the reserves, because as I understand it, what we are also doing tonight is not only approving the annual accounts, but approving the movement of these reserves, which is a really important decision. Now, we've already agreed to transfer reserves from the new homes bonus fund into other reserves. I can't remember exactly what they were. Please can you explain what other movements are going on in the table in front of us other than that one which we've already agreed? Yes, page 35. Oh, it's actually 48 on the iPad. It's 35 of the annual accounts, 48 of the agenda. I just ask a question on that one before we move on to the others. And so there's a 102. So originally that fund was there to fund the apprenticeships both internally and externally. It shows that there's £100,000 remaining on that fund. Has that been committed and will it be spent? And is it being spent on the purposes to which we originally agreed?
Yes, it's all going to be spent on the purposes to which we already agree. I think that the bulk is committed. I'm not 100% sure if I can come back to you with a written response on that.
Yes, please, because I can remember there was actually a remainder, because when the proposal came forward, this council removed some spends from that relating to apprenticeship grants, and I don't know what it was ever then spent on. But thank you.
Again, the election reserve for the in-year movement reflects the drawdown on the reserve. We build up funds over 4 years to help with the cost of district election, and that's really drawing down funds from the election reserve to cover that. We also make an annual contribution to the reserve of £20,000 to build it back up again. Council Tax Hardship Fund, again, that was a member-approved fund. We agreed to transfer £6,000 a year into a fund. For use on council tax hardship cases. Today we've not used any of that money. We've dealt with that sort of issue through other reliefs in the council tax system. The new homes bonus reserve, again, that's based really on the transfers that we agree when we come to set the budget. It's the unused new homes bonus each year, and obviously also, as I mentioned, it takes account of the budget surplus that I've transferred into the new homes bonus reserve this year, 15-16. Again, the grants reserve is a working reserve, so any committed expenditure on grants is rolled into the reserve and then drawn down as required throughout over the years. IT fund, members agreed to set up an IT fund and which is in effect self-financing, so services can draw down for specific IT requirements and then they repay into that fund over the years, so it's a self-financing fund. The improvement contingency and emergency fund, well, we've been transferring money into that fund over the last few years, particularly in 14-15 when members agreed to transfer £320,000 into the fund to deal with various issues, including provision for any appeal costs from planning appeals and to cover the cost of change going forward. Local development framework, again, that's the provision that we've built up over the years to cover the cyclical costs of work on the local development plan. Operational reserve, that's been built up over the years, and again, it's an operational reserve, really. It's got all sorts of things in there. It's got grant income in, which has no restrictions, which will draw down as required for particular projects. It's got, again, I probably need to come back to you with the detail on that. We've got a working paper on that, which I can certainly send through to members. And, of course, we've got the restructure reserve, which is used to fund the cost of voluntary redundancies in the organisation and potentially compulsory redundancies. We contribute £50,000 a year, and that's in the budget. And in this year, we've drawn down £213,000 to cover the cost of the voluntary redundancy process.
Thank you, Chair. I'll put these two bits of questions in with that because it fits in with the same pages. I'm a little confused. If we're taking money, and I think it's naming, it's not questioning the actual finances of it, but if we're putting money in to top up the need for revenue from the new homes bonus, and then you take money out that you've got spare at the end of the year, is that not going to make it tricky looking as to what happened with the new homes bonus, unless you're assuming that then in that year you've got to take off what you've got in surplus at the end of the year away from what you've put in at the beginning of the year? And I'm just wondering, you've got here, you're going down, it's just the names of the things. You said the operational reserve. Would it be helpful, useful and clearer if at the end of the year when you had a surplus that it went into the operational reserve, brackets, holding account, so that then council decides what happens to it rather than it go into new homes bonus? If you decide it goes into new homes bonus, it isn't lost money, but then council decides it goes somewhere else. It's dot of a job to trace over the years what has happened to it. So and on that basis, it's sort of the naming of the thing. You would expect the new homes bonus to be the new homes bonus, and then you'd be able to see each year what had come out from the fund. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's gone into one year or the other, as long as it's clearly recorded. I'm just wondering if that would be clearer in terms of how it's happening. The second point with that, and I don't know whether it's exactly with that, if we are deciding whether we agree with this or not, and as it stands, I'm looking at names for the future, not criticism of what's happening here. If we approve the accounts, which I think we should be doing with one small modification, that means we can't shuffle this round as it is now. And I'm just wondering whether we should have two recommendations in front of us. One is that we approve the accounts, as is here, as is printed, as is everything else, and that we decide what we're doing as to which reserves as a separate vote. Now, I'll leave that to you and the Chair to decide. But Councillor Ives said what I thought we'd be doing is agreeing where money was in the reserves, but I can't see it from what we've got here. Thank you, Chair. And I've got one question to come back to, which is the only one I had before we started on this bit.
Um, I'll try and answer your question. So in terms of the new homes bonus reserve, the first thing members need to appreciate is that the money that goes into the new homes bonus reserve is just the unused element. The whole new homes bonus grant doesn't go into the reserve. Under proper accounting practice, we have to account for the whole grant through our general fund. So it all comes in as income. In effect, what we're doing is we're leaving in the amount of money that we agreed at budget setting that we needed to fund the revenue account, and then we're transferring the remainder to, in this instance, we transferred 288,000 to the capital fund, and then the balance of unused new homes bonus we transfer into the new homes bonus reserve. And as I said earlier, the reason I've in effect moved the money into new homes bonus reserve this year is linked to the decision that we made earlier in the 16-17 financial year about the drawdown of new homes bonus to fund the cost of change. In previous years, I've made different recommendations, and we've used the surplus to go into the ICE fund, some to go into the restructure reserve. So we've done different things in different years. My recommendation this year is that the money is all put into the new homes bonus reserve. You might need to remind me of your second question.
Second one is when we come to the vote tonight, where we've put money into which reserves is not really whether or not we're agreeing with the accounts, it's which pot we think the money should be in. And Councillor Ives suggested that we would be deciding on whether we were agreeing with that tonight. I thought we would be. But if we just agree the accounts, we're only agreeing what we've got here and we're not really looking at it. So should we be taking a separate vote first as to whether we do or whatever? It shouldn't be a change in the accounts. The accounts aren't going to burst into flames if we move something from one reserve to another, but it still leaves members in charge of which reserves things are in, for whatever reason. I'm easy either way, personally.
I mean, the reason I've done this is because, you know, we have to produce a set of accounts, and moving balances into reserves, from my point of view, constitutes financial administration as per Part 4, Section 5 of the Constitution. So that's why I've taken it upon myself to do that. Obviously, the final decision is with P&R. If members decide that they want to do something at this late stage with the surplus, then that's for members to decide.
If I could just come back on that, that isn't what's in front of you tonight. If you,
that's what I was saying. It's not in front of us tonight.
No,
but Councillor Ives and I were both wondering whether or not, and I believe it was said at scrutiny last night, that the decision as to what went into what fund would be decided by P&R, and I raised an eyebrow at that because it wasn't in front of us tonight. I'm quite happy for it not to be in front of us tonight, but let's not pretend it is if it is, and if it isn't, that's fine.
It isn't in front of you. These are notes to the accounts. They form part of the accounts, and you're being asked to approve the accounts tonight.
I'm happy with that, Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Yes, I've got the question I've had before we went down that route, and that is in relation to the payroll at York. Is this a tackle agreement? Because it has been a thorn in our side for, 3 years, I think it first came to P&R, November 14, something like that, and has been grumbling away in the back of the accounts for a long time. I'm on the annual governance statement on page 89, 90, 91. I'm on the internal auditor's report that went on at massive length about that. And, you know, we're saying here we need to do something about that, and I'm asking and presuming, and I could be wrong, but presume as that is a local government doing something for another local government, it's under a TECL agreement.
Chair, I'd need to come back to members with the legal status of that agreement. And I'm not clear at this point in time.
Any Any further questions for Peter? Right, we'll move into the debate then. Would somebody like to move the recommendation, or I'll move the recommendation? Would someone like to second that for me, please? Luke. Thank you, Luke. Anybody like to speak on that? John.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move an amendment, and that's page 92.
Do we have the amendment?
Yeah. We haven't got any amendment slips here, Chair. Page 92 on the third...
Just hold on, I'll get you some paper to write it on.
We have no membership, no amendment slips.
No.
Ah, right. It's only two thank lines. So, well, oh, thank you, Steve. That's kind. It's on the third bullet point down on page 92. Page 92 on the minute. Yeah. It's the
agenda.
Annual governance statement. When we found it, I shall continue. Are you ready, Chair? Right, Chair. Sorry about that. The amendment reads, subject to the following change to the AGS action plan, add the IEASY contract to be monitored and controlled in the same way. Now, the reason for that is that I believe the two types of contract are similar. And I think it would be sensible to start now, before internal auditors do, or external auditors do, to put in a monitoring of that contract in the same way as we haven't done. In other words, do what we should be doing for the York TECL contract, for the same thing for the AIEC contract.
Do you have a seconder, John?
I hope so, Chair.
Could we have the amendment then, please?
Yeah. It fits in, Chair, but the wording of it would be massive if you... It fits in on the third bullet point on page 92. The top one would... The thing reads, the audit opinion, etc. And then underneath that, check, put a little one in front of that, put a little two in front of the next bit, IEASY contract to be treated similarly. And that gives officers complete freedom to do whatever in terms of monitoring it, but means that it will be monitored now, not when the auditors possibly pick it up in the future.
Joy, did you want to say anything? Would anybody like to speak on that? Luke.
Yeah, I don't really get the purpose of the amendment. This council has hundreds of suppliers, and I don't see Councillor Clark proposing that we monitor all of our suppliers in the same way that he is with IEASY. He seems to have a particular problem with IEASY, but that's between him and IEASY, not this council and IEASY. and I think it's unfair to single out a sole supplier, and we should continue to use them as we always have and allow officers to use them in the way that allows them to manage the business of the council. Thanks.
Anybody else like to speak on this? Thank you. Back to you then. Jai, did you wish to speak? John?
Well, fascinating, Chair. So only one opposition voice to this. I was hoping to get just plain, straightforward and simple support and keep it, get the job done. But if we're going to bring it further out into the open, we can do. No, I haven't got a personal, whatever it was Councillor Ives was saying against IEASY. I have no clue who they are or what they are, anything about them, other than what we've been told within council. What I do know is this council is so on top of this contract that when I ask how much have we spent as the annual subscription to join IEASY, we don't know. I then ask again, and I'm told, in writing, about £5. I'm then told again, in writing, by the leader of council, £1. But the invoice in this building says 6,000. Now, I know in accountancy terms that's fairly close, and that's not a swipe at Pete, because there's nothing in accountancy terms. I think here's a question. I think it's a question of not knowing what the contract is about. And the accounts department is not running the contract. And on that basis, it is, and I have no reason to believe, that the joining fee was 6,000. But it doesn't strike me, and I was quite happy for this to slip in quietly and just sail on and get looked at over the next year. It is not acceptable to have several public requests as to how much something costs and being given wonderful figures like £5 and a pound, and then when you dig into it, finding it's 6,000. And all I'm suggesting here is that the IEASY contracts be monitored and controlled in the same way. In other words, we make sure that we've got it all right. Now, I can't see any problem with that. It's not criticism. It's certainly not criticism of the council department, because they actually were the people who came up with the number that I believe that it's right, the 6,000. But members were not aware. And members tried to find out and were not aware. And on that basis, all I'm suggesting is that we monitor it through the next year, so that the auditors can't come along and say, as what they have done, we're in our third year with the payroll contract, with people saying, this isn't being monitored properly, it isn't being controlled properly, etc. And therefore, for the IEASY one, let's get it right. That's all I'm suggesting.
Right, as mover of the original amendment, I am going to speak on this, and that is to say that to claim that the figure of 6,000 is the joining fee that we paid to IEASY is completely misleading, and that it was £1. So we move. Sorry, we will move to the vote on this now. And we're voting on the amendment.
Chairman, that's three votes for the amendment and six against. Therefore, the amendment has failed.
Thank you. So could we move back to the original amendment then, please? Would anybody like to speak on that? Councillor Clark.
Just quickly, Chair, it's a point of information. Is that amendment going to be, that we've just moved and lost, going to be minuted? Because if it is, that's fine. I don't need to go any further with it.
Are they normally minuted?
I don't know whether amendments fail are or aren't. No,
just the decision.
Just the decision.
Could I ask for it to be minuted? Otherwise, we're just going to raise it at full council and. I don't mind losing, but I don't like it being lost into the sand.
Oh. Yeah, I'm quite happy for the wording.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. That's super.
Minuted. Right, we'll move back to the vote then on the original motion.
Chairman, that's 7 votes for and 2 against.
Thank you very much.
Chair, could, I think I can say we on this case, have our votes recorded and it noted that it's only on that amendment. In other words, we would be voting for it otherwise.
Could you put a note to that effect in the accounts, please?
In the minutes.
Got to cancel the bread. Yeah. It's that time of year.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nicky.
And can we thank Pete? Because I don't think we have. Very much so.
Goes without saying, doesn't it?
Oh, that's the trouble, Chair. I was thinking it had gone without saying.
I do know exactly how much work goes into this, Peter, on a much larger scale than I deal with accounts. And yes, we do appreciate all the work that you do. Right, next item is item 8 on your agenda, which is the rail service enhancement and options for car parking and reduced congestion update. And Julian is going to take this.
Good evening, members. The report on, starting on page 139 of your agenda, provides an update in terms of the work that's been ongoing to investigate options to deliver enhanced rail parking and measures to reduce congestion at the rail crossing in Norton. And I should stress this is work in progress, and what we've tried to do is set out for you the key areas that have moved forward, but it's clear to me that at this point we need to be quite certain what the input of other key partners is going to be to this work. This is a complicated issue. There are many partners and stakeholders involved with this, as I'll explain in a moment. So this work follows the decision at the April 2016 meeting of Council, when we were looking at the Rydale Economic Action Plan and future priorities. Members decided that that they wished us to take a particular focus on the need for enhanced rail parking and measures to reduce congestion because of the improvements to the rail service that are forthcoming, and the impact that that might have on the way that traffic moves around Malton and Norton. The details of the improvements to the rail service are set out in the report and at Annex A of the report, but suffice to say that the new franchises for the York to Scarborough line and the East Coast Main line mean that there are going to be significant improvements in the frequency, capacity and quality of the services between York, Malton and Scarborough, and an impact of that is that there will be increased closure of the railway crossing between Malton and Norton, and the estimate that we have at the moment is that will be for a maximum of 10 minutes in every hour during the day. I won't go through every point of detail about the improved services, but they're set out on pages 140 and 141. I think that the key points to focus on are that from December 2019 at the latest, Arriva Rail North are going to be introducing a new hourly service that will supplement the existing TransPennine Express service. So there's essentially going to be a service every half an hour to either York or Scarborough. And the quality, the amount of capacity on the trains, the quality of the service and the facilities are correspondingly significantly improved. And new trains are also introduced additional frequencies that mean it's going to be easy to travel between York and Moulton Scarborough later in the evening and at weekends. Be able to get a train from Moulton in the morning that gets you into King's Cross for 9 a.m. And over time, these improvements are going to change quite significantly the connectivity of Moulton and Norton, so that over a longer period of time, the journey time between Moulton and Leeds will reduce from an hour to around 40 minutes. And that's going to, those kind of changes are going to clearly impact upon future policy approaches and will be something to be taken into account. So there are many benefits to the improvements in service, and we must realise that. Economic, social, accessibility to employment, etc. But there are also potential impacts. And to move forward work on this issue, a full-day workshop session was held here on the 23rd of August, to which local members were invited, where we had the rail service providers, we had the County Council, we had Moulton and Norton Area Partnership, Town Councils, the Local Cycling Forum, Public Transport Group, the Fitzwilliam Estate, etc. And that considered issues and possible solutions that arise from this opportunity, but also how we manage that. And again, I won't go into the detail, but those ideas are set out on pages 142 and 143 of the report, and they range from quite detailed specific measures, perhaps to enhance access to the station or the facilities that are available for passengers, to some really major infrastructure works to improve access around Moulton and Norton to deal with that. And there was clearly a real appetite from the community to prioritise this work, given the potential impacts, positive and negative, on Moulton and Norton and the Rydale area. And we are going to need a strong commitment from partners. I'm content that the rail service providers are well on board here, but at this stage of the game, we don't know just exactly what their commitment will be in terms of what they will fund by way either of investigations or facilities themselves. We have looked at a range of sites around Moulton and Norton in terms of additional car parking as requested. That's led to some sites being immediately discounted, but I will be able to report back to you on preferred options once we've advanced the discussions. A lot of this rests around traffic management measures, and both for pedestrians, cyclists and motorists, not only in terms of how we deal with the closure of the crossing, but also access to the station and parking facilities, etc. And in terms of next steps, we need to tie down what the input will be of the County Council in particular, but also other key stakeholders to this work. There needs to be an agreement in terms of, I'm certain that external input is required in terms of investigatory work. There's some fairly specialist engineering work that needs to be looked at. We can take forward some of the easy to deal with proposals, but I am going to be coming back to you with a proposed approach, anticipated costs, and what the input will be of other partners. But at this point, I don't know for certain, or I'm not sufficiently certain to make recommendations to you about amounts at this point. The list of issues that were raised by the community to try and tackle all of those would take an awful long time. So we need an agreement between the partner organisations as to what we can bite off at this stage and then how we take that forward. And in essence, I think that captures what I'm saying to you. I'm more than happy to take any questions. Apologies for bringing a recommendation of noting a report. It isn't what I would normally like to do, but this is an issue that touches upon an awful lot of different aspects in the way that life works in this part of the world. So thank you, Chairman.
Paul, did you have a question?
Yes, Chairman, two. First of all, it states that the recommendation of the Council will include the need for a feasibility study funded from the New Homes Bonus Reserve. My question is, why can't we do this work ourselves? I mean, we had this long parking strategy document that was done years ago. We did that in-house. Why do we have to have a parking strategy document or a parking specifically related to the railways done by external? Why can't we do that ourselves? That's the first question. The second question relates to the level crossing itself and use of the level crossing. Now, of course, that meeting that we had, a lot of stakeholders were invited to, was before the decision of the County Council to consult on an 18-ton limit going across the level crossing. And I think all the advice and all the wishes of the local people was that the weight restriction should be to 7.5 tonnes. Now my question is, would the consequences of the work that is proposed, of the changes proposed, be a lot easier to deal with if the 7.5 tonne weight restriction had been adopted instead of the 18 tonne weight restriction?
I don't know, and in relation to your question as to why we don't just do this in-house, it's because the primary aspects of this work relate to highway engineering and highway modelling, and we're not the highway authority, and although I've had more connections with highway modelling than I might wish to do, then I'm not in a position to be able to undertake such work, and quite frankly new modelling would need to be done to measure the impact of the planned improvement in service in any case. And so, and the operation of the railway network is complex, the roles of the different organisations, but there certainly are clear roles for the service providers in terms of Arriva and TransPennine Express, but those roles differ in terms of TransPennine Express have responsibility for Moulton Station, but then complexities in terms of the role of Network Rail, etc. This involves a lot of different organisations. It involves specialist work, and whilst I would love to be able to say to you, yeah, we'll do this in-house, we're not in a position to do that, I'm afraid.
Thank you, Chairman. I too am thinking that in-house reporting of this to create a report in-house while we're reducing in size or trying to would be a non-starter. I've looked at this on bottom of page 142, last bullet point, new bus rail interchange. I haven't been attending work for a year now, so this is old news so far as I'm concerned, and it might not be relevant even now. But the last conversation I had with the depot manager for Yorkshire Coastliner on this particular topic is he knew nothing about the proposal for a rail interchange outside the station, and that the buses would stop and load passengers on and off outside the railway station, as if that's what the proposal was, I think, which historically, I think that initially that was the proposal, that buses would load and unload passengers right outside where the taxi rank is currently. So, first question is, where would the taxis go? Secondly, it's a highly populated area with pedestrians over there. Where the buses currently get people on and off is a fairly regulated and safe place in many respects for people to walk about without a fear of being crushed by rather large wheels. I think in that particular location there is a risk element that I would consider slightly higher than what would be considered acceptable. So I would like a careful thought to be given to any particular realignment and relocation on that subject. Plus, the facilities are not at the station. There are no facilities there. I know that this application is for improved facilities in a waiting room and so forth, but that isn't there yet. And without the initial, this is going to be there, I can't see that we should progress to any further of let's go and investigate and see if it can be done. And I think that would be wasteful of finance. So for that element, I'm thinking, can we put that particular piece on the back burner till we get something a little bit more solid as to what people are going to do? And can I also then welcome the actual increase in numbers of rail traffic along this corridor from Scarborough, from the East Coast, and down to London even, long overdue? I think the economic kickback and benefit for this section of the UK would be immense. But that's an opinion, not a question. So if we can, I've got concerns about this interchange.
A couple of points to make. The reference here at the bottom of 142, that what we're doing is reporting back to you what a group of stakeholders had to say in terms of what they would like to see achieved to make best use of the new services and to then connect people onto bus services and be able to get out into the remainder of Rydal. But you should be aware that this is a proposal that dates from the 2005 Moulton and Norton Service Centre Transportation Strategy. It's still referenced in the local plan because of the importance of, you know, if there's going to be growth at Moulton and Norton, then there needs to be sustainable forms of transport. Early work was done with Coastliner in about 2006 by the County Council. I was involved with that. But as we've seen changes to public sector finances hit, then that element of the County Council has by and large disappeared. So I don't think the County Council themselves actually have the capacity to do much of what's involved here. I'm sure it will all be a matter of going out to Mouchel or a similar consultancy to do some of that work. But when the public were asked about a bus rail interchange when the consultation happened in 2004, then they were very supportive of it. In terms of how would it work, as with many other aspects of this, we don't actually know, and so you would need engineers looking at flows around that to be able to come up with options.
Thank you, Chair. I think it was before 2005. You may have been originally scoping for the traffic movements and the overall plans for Moulton and Norton. And at that time, you realised that there ought to be stakeholders from further north in the whatever. So, but I won't ask you the embarrassing question of why was the nobody from our end of the world invited to take part at that time. But I will ask you what land under 611 do we own? Because, yes, I could do what John's doing and would like to do with this in pure questions. Which piece of land do we own in there? Other than Harrison House, which I assume we're not going to knock down for some interchange.
There are sites near to the station, St Nicholas Street car park, Water Lane car park. Land at Harrison House, and clearly the Transpennine Express have said that they would like a discussion about management of parking facilities there. Sites that are owned by the estate or owned by the estate and leased to other people. There are other third parties that hold land that could potentially help us on this front. So what I expect is it will be a combination of different approaches to different sites that will actually come up with the answer, some of which may be changes in management of our own existing car parks.
Any further questions? Right, in that case, we'll move to the recommendation, which is on page 139 of your agenda, and I'll move that recommendation. Would somebody like to second that?
I'll second it.
Okay, thank you. Luke.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Back in December last year, I was initially delighted when the government announced that from 2019, a second hourly train service will operate from Moulton under the Northern franchise, in addition to the existing Transpennine Express services, which will also benefit from brand new, faster trains. Such a huge increase in capacity has the potential to deliver a wealth of economic benefits to Rydell, and would normally be welcomed by commuters and businesses alike. However, an unfortunate consequence of the new rail services is that the number of crossing closures will double. The closure of the sole connection between Moulton and Norton will grind our road network to a halt. Not only will this cause misery for motorists and pedestrians, but it will hinder the economic development of the towns. Over 1,500 new homes are planned in Moulton and Norton over the next 15 years, but this growth will simply not be possible if the vital artery connecting the towns is to become blocked. We must do something to address this situation urgently. It is simply not acceptable that automatic signalling will not be introduced until 2024 at the earliest, nor is it acceptable that there are no plans to improve the layout of the crossing, despite it being a huge risk to safety. For this reason, I moved a motion at the council meeting in August to commission a feasibility study to investigate ways to reduce traffic congestion. Unfortunately, this was watered down by Councillor Mrs Burr, and instead of having concrete plans before us tonight, we have a recommendation to simply note the report. We do not have time for procrastination. There are only 19 months before new train services could start. And while the report states that we could potentially conduct a feasibility study at some point in the future, there are no timelines or objectives. This is something we must do now. Not only should we be doing more, but the same can be said for other agencies. Any solution will involve multiple bodies, such as North Yorkshire Highways and Network Rail. However, by funding a feasibility study, it shows the seriousness of our concerns and allows us to press others to take action too. Key to any solution will be government support, so we must ramp up our lobbying efforts. I have myself taken up the issue directly with the Minister responsible for the railway line, Andrew Jones MP, who provided a verbal assurance that he will look into the matter. However, the government is much more likely to take action if they are presented with costed solutions, which is why a feasibility study is so important. Likewise, it will allow partners, such as the LEP, to make bids to the local growth fund, which I understand is desperate for shovel-ready projects to enable economic growth. Given the threat that the level crossing poses to the economic development of the towns, I cannot think of a more potentially suitable scheme. In view of the seriousness of my concerns, Madam Chairman, I wish to move the following amendment. This Council is deeply concerned that without alleviation measures, the planned increase in railway crossing closures from 2018 in Moulton and Norton will cause significant traffic congestion and impede economic growth. To this end, this Council resolves to 1. work with partners to support the commissioning of a feasibility study to investigate ways to reduce traffic congestion at Muttleton and Norton Level Crossing and deliver enhanced facilities to support increased use of rail services. In consultation with the Chairman of the Policy and Resources Committee, officers may use the new Holmes Bonus Reserve to fund the Council's contribution to such a study. And the second part is to lobby the Member of Parliament for Thurscombe Moulton, Ministers, North Yorkshire County Council, Network Rail, rail operators and other relevant agencies to work urgently to reduce traffic congestion and enhance parking and other passenger facilities before the commencement of new services. I'll just distribute the amendment around.
And I'm sure, Luke, that you do realise that if this is successful, it then becomes a Part B and will go to full council.
Yes. Can I just clarify? Is it only the first part of the amendment that becomes a Part B, or is it all of the amendment that becomes a Part B? Because you could do the last part just through the committee delegations, but the second bullet point, but the first bullet point, you understand, has to go to full council because it involves the NHB reserve.
Definitely would agree. It's the use of the new Holmes bonus that takes it into a Part B, and policy and resources are quite able to lobby anybody, anytime, any place, anywhere.
So
should we vote twice on it, take it in two parts?
I think there's been occasions before when we've approved a recommendation here, but only the part that is a Part B item goes
right
on to full council. So at full council, we would be voting on to approve the feasibility study. We wouldn't necessarily have to vote on lobbying of the Member of Parliament, etc.
So you do have a seconder, Councillor Oxley. You've seconded that. Thank you very much. Do you want to speak, Luke?
I think in my
point of order, Chair, before we do get into that, I think it's very tricky deciding. If you want two amendments, we've got one amendment here that's the whole of it, and that new homes bonus, we haven't got a set amount. I can't see the problem for the sake of a few weeks, and it is a few weeks until full council. The disadvantage, there's nothing to stop people, but you can't lobby much better when you've got a report underway, etc. So on that basis, I can't see any problem in the whole lot going to full council. Rather, because if we're going to do it separately, then we ought to have two separate amendments, etc. And I think it's just far easier to put the whole lot to full council and then look at it there. And I can't see the lobbying, because we've already got in the report. And what we've had further is there's nothing to stop anybody or anything lobbying being done.
Luke, did you wish to speak?
Obviously, it's up to you, Madam Chairman, whether you wish both to go on to full council or not. It's up to you how you deal with this. I'm happy with either. I won't speak on the amendment, as I think I spoke mostly on it during my initial speech, but I will come back to any points which are raised in this debate. Thank you.
Will.
just to pick up primarily on two issues. One is the raison d'etre for this process was about shovel ready for let monies, and I think we have to recognise that undoubtedly as money does come down from government, the let will need shovel ready projects, and I would love us in this council to have one that if somebody suddenly says, here's some money, we need something to spend it on, what have we got that's ready, this might be something that is ready to go. The second point I'd make is that the trains are coming to Moulton, whether we like it or not. I sit 9 miles up the road, and
I sometimes wish Pickering was moving at the speed that Moulton was moving at. Moulton is stirring, there's no doubt about that. This will add to it, and to maximise the impact of the potential benefit for this, this project needs to be ready to go. And I would, the further we can push it, the quicker we can push it, the more expedience with which we could push it, I would urge everybody in this council to do that.
Anyone else? Paul?
Yes, Chairman. I share Councillor Ives' concerns. I also welcome the increase in rail traffic. I welcome the increased use of Moulton station, I hope. But when we're talking about 10 minutes the barrier being down for 10 minutes, that's not the total time that of the impact on traffic, because there is time, there's 10 minutes before the barrier is open and before the barrier is closed, and the 10 minutes after the barrier is open when traffic has been congested has to clear, and that will totally mess up the traffic. We did think that the traffic congestion and issues down at Butcher Corner, down at the air quality action area, would be resolved to a certain extent by a 7.5 ton weight limit. And that I think was agreed at the area committee, went on to the county executive, wasn't good enough for the county executive, so the county executive said, and we'll consult on an 18 ton limit. If this council wants to achieve anything, one of the things it could do is to try and get the county back to the 7.5 ton limit. As regards the work, we talk about money that could be made available, as Councillor Luke Ives talks about, for work that would relieve traffic congestion. What you're talking about in reality is either a four-way intersection at Broughton Road, which is between Broughton Road and the A64, or a rail river corridor road back around the wool growers with a bridge across the river, or an underpass or an overpass over the level crossing. None of those things are feasible in the present financial climate. And whereas I understand where Luke Ives is coming from, I think this council is really in cloud cuckoo land if it thinks that a report with paying money for a report on traffic reducing measures is going to achieve a satisfactory solution. I don't know how I'm going to vote on his amendment. I suspect I shall abstain and wait for the full council meeting before I consider the matter carefully. But I do not want this council, this committee, to think in any way by passing a resolution like that, which might have the necessary public relations effect to ameliorate public opinion, is going to achieve anything. It will not. The one thing this council could do is get that weight limit down to 7.5 tonnes. That would help.
Anyone else? John, and then John.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Well, I hear what everybody's saying. We're living in exciting times, in a sense, as I see it. We can encourage Network Rail to make sure the timings of the traffic, rail traffic coming through there, are coterminous, are coming from each direction, and they arrive at that same point at the same time. But we have to acknowledge that the set-off times from the stations at either end of the rail of this spur line might not be conducive to such an action. Because York stations are a busy place as well. I can't say the same for Scarborough. But if we want trains coming and going across this level crossing in opposite directions at the same time, you have to have the set-off times from the stations at either end to be at the time they have to be to make that possible. The weight restrictions, I just wouldn't actually give a weight limit. I'd say all HGVs, all large vehicles, ban the lot. I'd put cameras up and earn some money from the people who are stupid enough to go past them. A congestion charge ought to be considered as well. They do it in other towns and other cities. Why can't they do it here? If people won't play ball on the traffic, we're going to have to clobber them hard, because you know and I know that there will be carnage around there with the roads if we don't do something drastic and serious. And we've got to do it, and we've got to mean it when we do it. We can't pussyfoot about on this particular one, otherwise we will be taken advantage of. It's got to be serious, and okay, feasibility study might not be able to pull that particular one out, but there are things we can be doing and getting on with. But the feasibility study will bring in, at a later date, bigger finance. This region needs economic growth. This is one spur. The other spur will be the duelling of the A64 in its entirety to Scarborough from York. That would open up this area to economic development, huge economic development. And what do you want? Do you want to be economic and successful, or do you want to protect the green land forever and a day? There's a balance got to be struck here. It's a tight balance, and some people are going to be precious about their little patch of land, and I appreciate that. But we've got to be realistic. For future growth, we need to be able to provide the jobs in the developments that we need to build at the place that we need to put them, and we need to be forward-thinking and a little bit ambitious. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. John.
Thank you, Chair. Well, apart from the concept, when we did the local plan, the world seemed to revolve around Great Hapton. Now I realise that the whole of British Rail's timetabling is going to be revolving around the trains passing exactly the same time in Malton. I need to declare an interest, Chair, as a county councillor. I hadn't realised we were going anywhere near this lot tonight, but I'm delighted that we are. If we'd been invited to the stakeholders meetings, we were back in something like 2003 and 4. We pointed out then that to reduce greenhouse gases, to protect the green land forever and a day that John's not too sure about, you really needed to boost up the railway traffic massively, and we had doubts about the duelling of the A64. But if you're going to put that in and you're going to bring goods into Malton, then you really do need to have a system there of a goods yard and a delivery system from it, so not 12 white vans going to Hovingham or wherever, but one white van going from the railway station and taking several lots of goods to Hovingham at the same time. That is a big, serious plan. It was mocked at the time, as I wasn't in the slightest surprised. I'm now getting the view that unless we look at park and ride into Malton, and we've got a bus station and a railway station for this lot pretty sensibly close to each other, and if you had people travelling in on minibuses on a circuiting system, you would reduce the amount of traffic in there, because we're not getting a reduction in the traffic in terms of the air quality level. So I have absolutely no problem with this amendment. I don't think it goes far enough in places. I'm given the jeebies of the of an unknown budget coming out of a new homes bonus with the chair agreeing with it. But on the basis that that can't happen, it's not even worth moving an amendment after this happens. So on that basis, we will be supporting it. But I think it actually probably between now and full council needs some bits losing and some bits beefing up to make it even more effective at all, and officers might be able to contribute into the wording of that by the time it gets to full council. But we as a group have supported this approach for, I think we're getting 13, 14 years now. So on that basis, no problem with it at all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Jim.
Thank you, Chair. A lot's been said on this, so I won't go on too much. But I do support the amendment, I think, because of the timeliness. And clearly, it isn't really for us to lead on traffic issues, but that is the nub of the question. Having a bit of money and having a proactive steer to help others take that forward will be useful. And given the impact that we know is going to come by increased rail traffic, the sooner we understand the issues and the options in a professional fashion, the better, really.
Thank you. Will, did you want to say anything else?
I think it's probably all been said. Just an observation, if I may. Am I the only person who doesn't understand why the signposts that send everybody off the A64 to Beverley come straight through Moulton, through Norton, and don't go down the A64 to Blandin Fields and bring them in round the other side of Norton? I don't understand why that doesn't happen, but
put that on the list. Luke.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm quite surprised at Councillor Andrews' defeatist attitude. He's basically saying, look, this is a problem, it's too big, it's going to cause havoc, we know that, but we can't solve it, so let's do nothing. That's what he was advocating. Actually, we can achieve things if we put our mind to it. No problem, however unseemingly impossible, cannot be solved. And there are measures that can be introduced. For example, if Network Rail digitise the signalling, that will reduce the length of time that the crossing closes. I often wait over 5 minutes waiting for a train to come past. It's far too long. If that was reduced by half, you're actually reducing the length that the closures are down. The crossings are closed, sorry. There's other things as well, such as improving the pedestrian access at the level crossing and also improving access to the station as well. If there was a pedestrian bridge over the railway crossing, you could provide access to the station from Norton side, which would reduce the pressure going over the main level crossing. So there are things that can be achieved which are not massively expensive that you alluded to. But it's only when we commission a feasibility study we will know what options are available, what they cost, and what can be achieved in a limited timescale. But the fact is, we've got to do something. We can't just do nothing because we think it's going to be quite difficult. Just in relation to Councillor Clark's point, yes, this amendment does not specify a cost for a feasibility study, but that's because it's a current unknown. We do not know what our contribution to the feasibility study will be before engaging in talks with partners. And we've got to commit to engage with those talks. We've got to commit that we want to do a feasibility study. So let's do that now so we can get on with the work. Given the very limited timescales here, I think it would be then silly, once we know what the cost is going to be and we all agree in principle that we want to proceed with this, to then come back to full council for a decision when it could be a small cost. There is something in there which gives the chairman of the Policy and Resources Committee basically the power to bring it forward back to council if she thinks it's going to be too expensive. But if we want to get on and do it, let's do it. The timescales are limited. We need to stop this procrastination. We need to get on with it. And that's what the purpose of my amendment is. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. I think what's been really interesting about all this has been that if you look at the stakeholder consultation and what came out of that, is that it identified all the things that many members of this council have been saying. So I think we're absolutely right to be looking for solutions to this. And I'm going to pinch a phrase from Janet, and that is that we're not important to anybody else. It's us that we're important to, and it's up to us to do it, same as it was with the flooding in Moulton, the flooding in Pickering. Time and again we have... Well, am I not allowed to pinch your phrases, or did I get it wrong?
I say we're nobody else's priority. Yes, I don't say we're not important to anybody else.
Right, I knew I would get it wrong. Anyway, so I'm really pleased to be supporting this, and I think it's one of the most important pieces of work that we shall do in the term of this council. Yeah. So could we move to the vote? So it's the amendment that you're voting on now.
Chairman, excuse me, Chairman, that's 8 votes for the amendment and 1 abstention.
Thank you for that. So we'll now move to the recommendation as amended. The amendment becomes the substantive motion. Paul, you wanted to speak.
Yes, Chairman, I'll have to come back on to Councillor Ives. I certainly did not say that we should do nothing. What I did say was, and I certainly have been behind. I was at that consultation meeting, and I agreed all of those proposals that were put forward at that consultation meeting. So don't think that I am a negative. What I am saying, Chairman, is that if we're talking about increasing journey times from Scarborough to London by 20 minutes, we're also potentially increasing the journey time from Moulton and Norton by about 40 minutes, possibly, as a result of this. Yes, I welcome the increase in the service, but the one thing that could be done immediately is for this council to put pressure on North Yorkshire Council to impose that 7.5 ton limit. And it really does surprise me that nobody on Councillor Ives' side of this committee has spoken in support of that. Because basically, when it comes to Moulton and Norton, the matter that mainly figures with the county council and with the I try not to mention political parties by name, but the Conservative Party in particular is that they tend to bow down and kowtow to vested commercial interests, and they have bowed down to vested the commercial interests of the road haulage industry, and that is why we have an 18 ton consultation on an 18 ton limit and not on a 7.5 ton limit. And I would appeal to this committee, particularly on your side of the table, Councillor Ives, to really put pressure on the county council to get to improve the 18 ton limit to a 7.5 ton limit. And that's, Chairman, it's a practical thing to do. It's a realistic thing to do. It's not going to cost a fortune. It's not going to. It doesn't need the appointment of hundreds of consultants to prepare reports which you might read next year. It's something that we could do now, and we can do it immediately, and it could have an impact.
I think even John would have to support me in saying that the Conservatives on the area committee couldn't have been stronger or more positive about wishing to have a 7.5 ton ban. They were absolutely clear about it, and always have been. John.
My hand was raised as soon as Paul said that, Chair.
Thank you.
You and I probably disagree on either 99 out of 100 or maybe more than that, but I don't think I can do anything here, and it hurts me to say this, but I can't do anything more than agree that the Conservatives, Rydale Conservatives, were absolutely full bore behind bringing it down to a 7.5 ton limit. So I don't think, Paul, that your target is right in this room. I'd just like to add that we need to do something, because the idea in the report here, being able to get to London for 9 o'clock in the morning when you need to, is absolutely brilliant, but it's going to be a bit iffy if you're having to add an hour and a half on at 6 o'clock in the morning to get through Moulton to catch the train to achieve that. And for someone who spent 19 hours from home attempting to get to London and getting as far as Peterborough, where the station roof blew off, and then returning to complete the 19 hours getting home, and management said, what sort of a day have you had? I don't think the answer was printable, so anything we can do to improve that in transport links is brilliant, but this is a way forward. I don't like the open-ended finances. We maybe ought to put a limit onto it. I agree in principle with it totally, but I don't think full council should be agreeing to a spend-some-money basis. There ought to be some sort of up-to figure put into it. We've got from now to full council to come up with what we think would suffice for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, John. Anyone else? Luke?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just on Councillor Clark's point, I'm sure that if we did put a limit in this amendment, well, it's now the recommendation, then it would actually become our contribution, because all the other partners would insist that we go into that limit. I'm sure that there will be a limit, Councillor Clark, but that will be for the Chairman of the Policy Resources Committee to discuss with officers. Just coming back to Councillor Andrews' few points that he made. First of all, he said in his previous statement that we were living in cloud cuckoo land, thinking that we could get anything done. We've had a discussion about some of the things that we could potentially achieve. We aren't living in cloud cuckoo land. What we're doing is trying to achieve something, and you're trying to put up barriers, excuse the pun. just in relation to your comment about business, yes, we the Conservatives, we are pro-business because we understand that's what generates wealth and betters the economic conditions for everyone. But we are not run by business, and your comments about the 7.5 ton limit were just ridiculous. We've already established that. But what I will say is that this council has already backed the 7.5 ton limit. We had a full debate at full council. There was also a debate at the planning committee. So it's quite regretful that all you could go on about, really, Councillor Andrews, was the 7.5 ton limit in the centre of Moulton, when we've got this huge, massive issue that's going to come up, that's going to have a huge impact in 2019 and will be a throttle on the growth of the towns is going to cause a nightmare for everyone, pedestrians and motorists. And all you're going on about is a 7.5 ton limit. Talk about looking at the ice cubes and missing the iceberg. Thank you.
Can we move to the vote now then, please?
Chairman, that is 8 votes for and 1 abstention.
Thank you very much. So we'll now move to item 9 on your agenda, which is the Rydale Housing Strategy Action Plan for 2015 to 2021. And Kim is going to introduce this report for you.
Right, thank you, Chair. Members will be aware that it's nearly 12 months since we brought the draft housing strategy to Policy and Resources. The draft was brought for members to agree that could go out for consultation to stakeholders and for any comments to be incorporated from members. The reason for the delay in bringing it back, you'll be aware there's been two major legislation changes or proposals, which have now, the majority of which have now become acts. The delay has been trying to work out how they impact Rydale Council, and you'll see in the report that we're still waiting for a lot of secondary legislation. But I didn't want to delay any more because it's 12 months since members have seen this. We need to approve this as our action plan, and I wanted members to be aware of what progress we'd made over the last 12 months, and I didn't think we could delay any further. So what I will be recommending, that the final version of this action plan is endorsed by members and the progress report is noted. A couple of things that I will I'll go through from the report. In there I've put some information about the Welfare Reform and Work Act and the Housing and Planning Act. I won't go through each bit of that, but the interesting or the elements that can affect this council is at 6.3.11, which is a social housing rent, which is a reduction in social housing rents. That affects our partner housing associations in that obviously they've got less money. They've had to all revise their business plan, so they're not as financially sound as what they previously were, which can affect their ability to work on developments with us. The local housing allowance rates, we have been meeting with Yorkshire Housing on a regular basis to try and find out the implications of this across Rydale. At the moment, Yorkshire Housing are doing feasibility studies into their accommodation. Until we get the results, we don't know how their policies may change with regards to housing under 35s into their stock. So until we know how our partners are affected, it's difficult for us to see, well, what are the gaps? What are the implications going to be? And how are we as a council going to fill those gaps? There's some changes to temporary accommodation. Won't have massive implications for Rydale because of the low amount of people we actually put into temporary accommodation. Funding's changed. People will be aware that the Homes and Communities Agency now only provides funding for shared ownership. So there is an inability to get funding for rented products anymore, which puts far more emphasis on Section 106 developments, because that's the only way we're going to increase rented accommodation across Rydale. The Housing and Planning Act, we have obviously put the majority of that into Annex 3 because we're still waiting for a lot of secondary legislation for it to be enacted. So it's difficult for me to say what the implications are going to be. So previously when the action plan came to members, we'd shown you the progress we'd made over the past 5 years. That draft's gone out to all stakeholders, it went out to yourselves, and you'll see I have included the updated one, is now Rydale District Council, the progress one. So that shows you the progress over the last 12 months and updated. I'll just refer to a couple of changes in there for members to be aware of. What we've looked at is, because there's been some changes in legislation, we think as a council we need to investigate much more with regards to direct provision. So we need to do some work in-house, and we'll bring that back to members. But there is implications. Our partner housing associations are telling us they haven't got as much money as they used to have. There isn't the ability to get money from the Homes and Communities Agency for rented products. So if that's the way we want to go, we might need to intervene. So we will be putting something together to bring back to members for different ways of doing that. We do have commuted sums. We do need to spend these commuted sums. So this could be an option to go forward. But I've put it in there because that wasn't in there previously. Right at the end. On page 16, which unfortunately it might be different on the iPad, but on the page 16 of the action plan, I just want to make members aware, we put on there where it talks about improved access to services. We're working towards the achievement of gold standard in the housing options service, and it says bronze standard was achieved. I just want to make members aware that we've now achieved silver standard, and that was in August of this year. So we're now in the top 3% of local authorities in England for the housing options service. And the one below on the improved support for young people, the young people's pathway has now just been recommissioned for a further 3 years by the county. So that's an update. I don't don't think there's anything else I want to go through on that action plan for members, but happy to take any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Just before we do take questions, I just want to take a minute to say thank you and to congratulate you on achieving the Silver Award, because honestly, to be in the top 3% in the country, that is a hell of an achievement, and I am certain we shall get gold. Right, who wanted to say something? Paul, you had your hand up.
It's on the page 162 of the agenda. Proposals, double our house building rate and triple affordable housing delivery compared to 2012 to 2013. What was the rate in 2012 and 13 and 13 and 14?
If you read from the action plan against the progress made against that proposal, it says delivered 4,618 new homes in 15-16 across the North Yorkshire and East Riding Partnership with a target of circa. So the target was 5,400. This represents 71% of the target to double house building from 2012-14 annual levels.
Chairman, is that for Rydale?
We didn't need to double that. When we've done a sub-regional strategy, the reason why we said to double house building was what we were doing was adding up what was in people's local plan figures. So if you add up what was in the local plan figure for each of the local authorities, if people actually delivered what was in there compared to what we were delivering, that would have doubled house building. So it's not doubling over what local authorities have said. And obviously on this progress report, Rydale is the only district to achieve its housing completions target in each of the last 3 years. So for Rydale, we don't actually have to double our house building. That was a proposal, and the proposal is for the whole region. So people like East Riding, York, they don't meet their allocation, we do. But that was the general proposal.
Yeah, I mean, I have to confess, it's an awful long document.
Oh no, sorry.
And I have attempted to skim it, but I wouldn't by any means lie and tell you that I've read it all, because I haven't.
But happy if you've got time at a later date to read it to come back to me.
The point that I'm coming to is, can it be made clear, please, that Rydale has met its targets, and Rydale is not being required to double or increase any of its targets, because I think that is important. Because my first reaction when I saw this was, oh dear, we're already building 200 houses. Now are we talking about 400 houses a year? And what impact is this going to have on Moulton and Norton if we're talking about? And what impact is this going to have on Moulton and Norton if we're talking about Moulton and Norton having 50% of all the new housing, bearing in mind the problems we've had with the railway crossing, bearing in mind all the problems we've had with its recent developments, and bearing in mind the county council's conservative executive's view that we should have an 18-ton limit on the crossing and not a 7.51.
What we can put in that progress is obviously that we have achieved our targets.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'll do two questions at once to save time, if that's okay with you. My understanding a year ago, because I was arguing down the line of why aren't we doing Rydale and whatever, was, tell me if I'm right or wrong, but the cost of doing one of these surveys across the whole lot was not much more than doing the cost for each of the areas. And if you did one for every area, it would just be a massive cost to each council, was my understanding from a year ago. My second question is under 6311 on page 149, the reduction of social housing rents. And I sat down with a cold towel around my head, and I still haven't got my numbers to agree with yours. Because if something is happening here for 4 years, and it was going up by CPI plus 1%, and it's now going down by 1%, that's 4 years at 2% difference, even if you didn't have any inflation. So on that basis, it would be 8% for lots of two. And then are we saying over those 4 years that inflation is going to be at 1% for each of those? I think there's a year missing there. Now, it doesn't alter the thrust of the report, and it doesn't make the report not brilliant, etc. But I just went, looked at that, and I thought, I think that's a notch worse than you've got there.
You could be right, John. Maths isn't my strong point. I think we...
Which was the answer I got to the question this time last year, Chair.
We got this from Yorkshire Housing, who've obviously done all their business planning. And they said it had knocked that percentage off. So I don't know what they were using as the CPI inflation. But obviously people think, oh, well, you're only going to be 4% down over the 4 years. Well, it's a cumulative and... Yeah, so every year they would have gone up by inflation, so now they've got to go down, and they gave me the figure of 12%. And I think it's 16 on their numbers. Yep, no problem.
Is it going to be any impact on this, on the right to buy?
Impact on what, the social rents or in right to buy in general?
Yeah, the social rent, the social housing availability with the right to buy.
Well, obviously right to buy at the moment is voluntary for housing associations. So there is pilot projects out there. If people have been reading the press, they'll understand that there hasn't been the take-up that they expected or what the government expected the take-up to be. So... it's gone a bit quiet, so we don't know what's happening from the pilots. We know housing associations can volunteer. It wasn't made mandatory for them. Not many are coming forward to volunteer. So it's basically watch this space. Yes, there will be a reduction. How much so, we don't know at present.
John.
Thank you. Well, I trawled through this document the other day when I was lying in my bed and not much else to do. It's one huge document which took an awful lot of getting through and still don't fully understand it even now. But one of the things, I can't remember at what page it is, but I'm using the memory of, I remember reading that the effect on the spare room aspect, what information can you give us on that? Is it going to be defunct or... re-examined by the government or what? Or has it gone out the window? Thank you.
Well, as you're all aware, you'll be aware if you've read the report, the local housing allowance rates will be changing for social housing, so they'll be brought in line with the private sector. What is still unclear, and we're still waiting for further information, as to whether people will be hit twice or whether it's just one. So we haven't had that detail. So if you are limited to what a one bed should be or a two bed, is that what's going to be in? Or are you going to be limited to what the local housing allowance is for your one bed because you're a single person, but you're actually in a two bed, so then they'll take another percentage off? I don't think it will be both. I think it might be like the private sector, it'll be local housing allowance. To then say we're then reducing it, because a local housing allowance is based on you're a single person or you're a couple, you can get a one bed. So that's an amount. To then take off a percentage because you've got a two bed instead, I don't think they would do both, but we're still waiting. Work in progress, it would be better if things came out a little bit quicker, because then we could come back and know far more about maybe what the implications are.
Anyone else got any more questions for Kim? Right. Could I move the recommendation then on page 147? Could I have a seconder for that? Thank you, Steve. Would anybody like to speak on that? John.
Thank you, Chair. Well, there's one thing that could improve housing massively, and that is rent controls. And that's beyond this council. But at the moment, rent controls are going mad, and that is shoving up rents to a level that the rest of the system can't cope with. But one of the things we could do, and I think Kim mentioned it earlier on, but just in a passing, and that is we have got to look at building. Serious building. On a basis of building council houses for the sake of the public understanding what we're talking about. Because our young people are being driven out of Rydale. Our affordable housing numbers through the spin-off from the private building sector is negligible in relation to the need. Yep, silver award, brilliant in relation to the target and etc. But I bet you every time we have done a survey as to what the need is, it's up into the hundreds. And the only way you can solve that is by building locally. As for the concept of right to buy, I have been in favour of right to buy since Mrs. Thatcher introduced it. But I would amend it, and would have amended it since then. But if you sell one, you can't sell it until the keys for the new replacement, modern double, triple glazed solar panels are there for people to move in. Then you can sell the old one. And we've got to go down that as a local. We are the housing authority, not the housing association, not the combination that we've got with this cheaper way of doing it. Those are our young people, particularly in Rydale, that need our support. And I'm not going to move it now. It's too late at this time of night. But we actually need a policy in this council to be, first of all, feasibility study, looking at, and then hopefully going down a policy of investing millions, borrowing it, which keeps your department, Peter, at full strength, borrowing millions to build housing for what we need, council housing. And on that basis, we'll never solve the problem in real terms. We can fiddle it, we can make it look good, we're doing better than others. Can I add my congratulations to the chairs, Kim? Absolutely brilliant. Gold, please, next time. But, Kim needs to be given enough support from this council in terms of building houses so that we can go back to where we need to do the job properly. Thank you, Chair.
John, you are really beginning to worry me because for the second time tonight, you and I are on the same page and you've nearly said word.
You've joined my page, Chair, where I've been for 20-odd years, so that's nice to hear.
You're saying word for word what I've been saying for quite a number of years now. And I think the only way we will tackle housing in our district, and this is where it matters to us, is buying or building council housing, for want of a better name. John.
Thank you, Chairman. Also, thank you, Kim, for a superb report. And well done on the silver. And you know, people who get a silver next time they go for gold. Vacant housing, we don't have many on our stock. It's strange that. But private properties in this area, there are a huge number of them that are vacant or have rooms that are not used. And lots of these are above commercial premises. So they don't have an encouragement because a lot of people say, well, it's my shop, I don't want people traipsing through my shop to get into the home, especially when I'm not there. Understandable. But there should be some sort of encouragement, and this encouragement comes in the form of finance, that is it possible for us to start and look at putting extra rates onto a commercial property that's got rentable property above a commercial asset. It's contentious, I understand that, but it's there's an awful lot of rooms and accommodation available in commercial properties. Conall Gregory, when he was MP in York, did a survey in York. 80% of the shops in York have rentable rooms above them that are not used for that purpose because of access problems. And it's only the access to that rented accommodation that was the problem. They're all empty. They're all not being charged for under the rate system. I think that's something, is it something that we could actually look at? Thank you.
We did do some work on this. How long ago, Kim? Is it 2 or 3 years ago? Longer? Yeah, empty properties.
We're doing it now.
It is ongoing. We do work on it all the time. Some people are absolutely determined to keep their properties empty. Pardon? Yes. Mm. Yeah, so it is work that we do, John. Right, Paul?
Yeah, throughout this document, there are phrases like dual to provide, update from Julian, that's on page 163.
You're looking at the wrong report. If you go a bit further, there's another version, the final version.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. That was the original version that you saw a year ago.
Right. Okay.
Anybody else? Right, can we move to the vote then, please?
Chairman, that's 8 votes for and 1 abstention.
Thank you very much. Did you get that? 8 for, 1 abstention. Right, we'll move on to item 10, which is delivering the council plan. You've got a variety of officers here tonight, so if you have any questions, I'm sure they'll do their best to deliver them, to answer them. It starts on page 201 of your agenda. Who's introducing this one? Nobody? No. Yeah. Any questions for anybody? Right, in that case, we'll move that we receive that report. Could we vote on that, please?
That's 7 votes for and 2 abstentions, Chairman.
Thank you. 7 votes for, 2 abstentions. If we could now move on to item 11, which is the business rates consultation. Peter, I presume you're presenting this. Yes, you are. It says so.
I'll try my best, Chair. This report focuses on the Council's response to 2 linked consultations. The first one focusing on 100% business rates retention, and the second on the relative needs funding calculation going forward. Both are quite technical consultations. The deadline for response is Monday next week, and Chair, the report is a party item because of this deadline. Can I just flag that in terms of the recommendation, it does say to recommend it to Council, and that's incorrect. That's a typo that needs correcting. The consultations went to Resources Working Party at the beginning of the month, and I think I've incorporated the issues raised by members within the draft response. Our draft response is very much from the point a rural authority viewpoint, and it's around ensuring a fair system based on a level playing field for all urban and rural authorities, and particularly to acknowledge that fact that the additional cost of operating in rural areas needs to be built into any new scheme. Now, I'm more than happy to take for members to add any comments or to make any changes to the response where appropriate, and I'm happy to take any questions.
I will say before you come in with questions that same as we said at Resources Working Party, this is a very technical set of questions, and I think many of us just didn't feel competent to answer them, and we thought that it really was more an officer. Yeah. Paul?
Yes, Chairman, I agree with you on that. The question that sort of puzzled me as I was going through this is the questions relating to devolution, and I'm just wondering where we are under the new government in relation to devolution. Is it still going forward? Has it died a death? Is it in limbo? Are we waiting for further instructions? It'd just be helpful because some of the answers to these questions, which are, as you say, very technical, do actually refer to, well, we're not devolved yet. So can I have some comment, please?
I think devolution is still talked about a lot. And do we have a meeting arranged, Janet?
Yes, it's the Friday the 7th of October in Salem.
Right, yes. So there is another meeting coming up about devolution. And, all leaders are continuing to try and work towards an agreement.
So nothing has changed since Mrs May became Prime Minister?
Any more questions? Right, in that case, what was the recommendation, Peter? I've lost it. What page were we on?
Page 209.
209. So the recommendation is that we agree the response to the consultations attached at Annex C. So I'll move that. Would someone like to second it?
Yep.
Thank you. Does anybody want to speak on that, or can we go straight to the vote? John?
Just briefly, on the basis that there's more questions in here that I don't understand than what I do, I hope that Pete is happy with the bits that work. It's been clearly done by members, and the bits that don't work is clearly his fault. As long as he's comfortable with that position, as long as he's comfortable with that position, I think we can proceed, Chair.
Right, we'll move to the vote then. Thank you.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Thank you. Item 12 is to move exempt. So would someone like to second that? I'll move it.
Yeah, I will.
Thank you. Can we vote on exempt then, please? Yep. Well, I actually thought that tonight was a good night for members to be able to talk about that particular page without having to worry about what they said. It's very difficult, I think, to debate the whole of the report without referring to figures in there. So I thought if we went into exempt, then you can talk without any fear of saying the wrong thing. But it's up to members to vote. We'll move to the vote on exempt.
Chair, before we do, I'd like to say a couple of words on that. Yeah, I understand your logic, and that was my feeling when I first saw it, and that's 2.5 agreements tonight. Then I thought, well, hang on a minute. Are we sure that we should be discussing this? And I'm just wondering whether we debate the first wodge of pages first that are not exempt, or I can't see why they're exempt, because people better work out what buildings we've got, etc., and discuss them. And then if there's anything anybody wants to say, we move into exempt for the last page. I am just nervous about things going into exempt for the sake of it, and I don't think there's anything up to that sheet that is not general knowledge. But I'm open to guidance. I'm not going to go to the stake. I just I'm always nervous about shoving things into exempt.
Yeah, I understand that, and but I do think this is a good opportunity, all the same, to be able to debate this without any fear of what you say. But it's entirely up to you, and we'll vote on it, and then we'll go with the majority. I'm quite happy either way.
Chairman, that's 8 votes for and 1 abstention.
Thank you. So we're moving to exempt. If you'd turn the recording off, please.
Just one second, Chairman, just while I pull it all back.